welcome to this new episode of the Idea Element show on Channel 9. I am here with Brian and Femi from Microsoft IT for yet another video on the launch of ADFS v2, which, by this time you know, finally hit RTM. Hi Brian, hi Femi. How's it going, guys?
Great, wow. How are you?
How are you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you guys so much for giving us some of your precious time. So, we invited you here on the show because we know that Microsoft IT did very interesting things with ADFS. But before delving into the matter, it's a tradition to get to know our victims. So, Brian, do you have a few moments for telling our viewers what's your history with Microsoft?
Absolutely. I joined Microsoft in 2001 as an engineer in Microsoft IT on our identity and access management team running Active Directory. And so I've been here ever since, just working this role currently. I am the identity architect for Microsoft IT and have had a long history with ADFS going back to our original ADFS v1 deployment.
Fantastic. You are definitely the man for the job. Femi, how about you?
I'm doing well. So I have a very intimate relationship with Microsoft. I came out as an intern in 03. I worked in the identity management support team as an operation engineer. And about 2 years later, joined the Active Directory Federation service, this man right here. And it's been smooth sailing since then. Worked on ADFS v1, now ADFS v2.
Fantastic. That's great. And ADFS is exactly the topic du jour. So, as I anticipated, you guys did a lot of work with ADFS. And I'm sure that our audience is eager to hear some details about what you've done, what you achieved, your thought about it, your experience.
Sure. So, Microsoft IT, one of our missions, in addition to running the network for Microsoft employees to build their products on, we have the goal of what we call being Microsoft's first and best partner, which more commonly would be dog fooding, or trying to maintain enterprise class level of services while doing so on beta code, finding bugs, providing the feedback to the product groups. And so we've been running ADFS v2 for almost 2 years now, since its first sort of beta inceptions. And we've been working with the product groups to on this deployment, giving them feedback, sometimes begging for their help.
It's been a fun adventure.
It's been a wild ride. So the ADFS v2 deployment is really sort of the extension of what we started back in 2005, which was our deployment of Server 2003 R2, which included this new thing called ADFS, this new model for authenticating users. Up until then, all we had was Active Directory. And so the first sort of scenario, which started in ADFS v1, was as we're working with partners, so our first federation was our online company store. We just needed something to kind of test the waters with. And so the idea was employee single sign-on. And we learned a lot with that. Having employees the ability to get rid of some of their usernames and passwords. And this became a core requirement. What we found, though, with ADFS v1 was it was really hard to, or really challenging to get the applications to support ADFS v1. And then ADFS v2 came along with corresponding the Windows Identity Framework and the guidance and the documentation and all of the things. We finally got the complete ecosystem that we needed to really be able to start to leverage federated IDs so our employees could get single sign-on. And that's really been, that was really the first requirement. In fact, today you would be hard-pressed to find any new outsourcing project or any new cloud application which is being stood up which doesn't support or doesn't have a requirement to support federated ID. And so ADFS v2 has really been the technology that's enabled us to start to leverage this functionality. many years ago, I did sort of an informal survey and found that the average Microsoft employee had 20 to 30 separate usernames and passwords just to do their job. Just different things that they had to get access to here and there.
Not good.
And it wasn't good at all. And so what we've done is we've been able to use ADFS to get in with the different business groups as they're standing up new applications, as they're providing new features for our employees, as they're doing things to make the employees' lives easier. And we're stepping in to provide the infrastructure on which they can build that. In fact, we've gone from ADFS being sort of this niche platform for, you know, kind of discrete operations, to now it's actually a full-blown infrastructure service offering from IT that is more or less a standard for the adoption of the cloud as we're looking at onboarding applications to Windows Azure, as we're working with third parties for hosting applications, or as we're looking at our business partners, having them gain access to our resources and our applications that we host in our perimeter network or in our DMZ or on our edge or whatever those cases may be.
And at that point, I think EDFS becomes real mission critical, right? Becomes a mission critical platform.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and so as in terms of an infrastructure service, going from this kind of side niche sort of thing to being something that today every line of business app is evaluating their roadmap to get on, which every project includes single sign-on as a required line item. Yeah. And so these are all things that makes it really important that ADFS V2, it needed to be more than just a service that IT could offer, but we had to make sure that we designed and deployed the service in a way that can be high availability, geo-redundant, has the scale to meet the needs. In fact, in reality, most of our consumers, most of our customers, being the application owners, don't really view ADFS as, you know, federation. They have the same expectations from our deployment as the services they get from AD. So we really strive to take ADFS and have it have some of the same kind of characteristics, the same availability, discoverability, as Active Directory itself. In fact, I think in a few minutes we'll probably have Femi talk about the exact deployment.
Yeah.
Before we get to that though, how many federations do you think we have on board now?
So we have a little over 200.
200?
Which is a lot. Went from about 50 when we started to about 200. And we're deploying about 10 to 15 a month.
Wow.
On average. This is it's a pretty great adoption.
Oh, that's great. And how long does it take to actually onboard one application to establish a federation?
So we have to look at it two ways, right? Expertise. So if you've been familiar with the single sign-on service or ADFS service, could take as little as 2 days. Just a bunch of wizard clicks and you're done. It's that simplified.
And
right.
2 days is our SLA.
Exactly.
Right?
It's, just based on just the recurring, just getting better at it too, the more onboarding we've had.
In IT tradition, 2 days is the SLA for about 10 minutes worth of work, right?
I'd say this is a newbie to the environment.
Exactly.
It takes probably roughly 2 weeks.
Yeah. 2 weeks. And what's the degree of interaction needed? Like it's a almost completely self-service from the point of view of the application owner, or do they have to get at the phone with you guys?
We've done a pretty decent job of getting the steps out there to an onboarding site where they can just go to and kind of leverage that and walk through the step-by-step. Eventually, there has to be some kind of negotiation that goes in, that comes within that. So that's the part where we need to come in and say, okay, what claims do you need? I'm going into details now, but it's some metadata that has to be exchanged for us to have that onboarding. But typically, it's self-service where you go in and kind of go through the step-by-step guide and figure out what you need to do. And if you have questions, there's always a DL that you can sync up with. So
the onboarding process that we have today, we've pretty much taken the 200 or so applications that we've worked with, and more or less gleaned the right questions to ask up front, right? So, put them in a template. We have the users, they fill out a form. It gives us all the information that we need. The duration is really involves with mostly the complexity of what they're looking for.
Well, so hardware first, like setting up the hardware to get this done. And you're right, the complexity depends on the application, what it needs to be used for, and the function and the business policies that are driving that as well.
Right.
So just that back and forth negotiation. That's what takes the most time.
So let's make the super simple case in which there are no claims involved. The application just wanted to achieve a single sign-on using Microsoft employees. Mm-hmm. Like, would that be something that is almost completely done following the steps that you provide?
Yes.
It's taking us longer to record this video than it takes to onboard that application. So we could have two or three of those. We could have two or three of those done by this.
Well, feel free to use the MPC while record if you want to. But move forward with the work.
But it does highlight one of the challenges that comes with not so much providing the infrastructure service, but providing this new model for the applications. Right, because we've got the application developers, and they're starting to think of all of the power that comes with claims-based authentication and with sort of the rich tokens that you can get from ADFS v2. And, well, if you're an application owner, then really they're thinking in terms of, look at all of this code, this custom code that I can get out of my application now, right, because I can offboard this to the infrastructure. And that's great. And so one of the things that we struggled with early on was how do we approach development of internal development of applications, right? Because you take a service like ADFS, and you start to think, if you're an IT pro, what you do is you start to think about what it does, right? It's an infrastructure service, it's security, it's doing authentication. And immediately, you know, the security guys start walking past your door looking a little nervous. The infrastructure guys are, you know, kind of like, well, I need to control it and things like that. And so one of the first things we had to do was figure out how do we maintain a quality service while allowing developers the flexibility. And so one of the first steps that we had to get over was we run the only ADFS infrastructure in this company.
Yep.
Right? And that's not true. What we found was and I'll just say this because we're the IT department, but we run the best ADFS infrastructure in this company. But that was important, right? What we told the developers was if you plan on working at 4 o'clock in the morning, because that's what our devs do, and you want to be able to reach into the ADFS server and turn a knob or push a button or tweak something, stand up your server. That's fine. Go figure out what your capabilities are, play with it, have fun, figure out what you need to do for your application, because they're trying to meet a business need, right? And then whenever you're ready, whenever you know what you need and you've got your application tuned and you know what you want the infrastructure to provide to you, then come to us, because we provide this high availability, geo-redundant service that where we've got guys who will monitor it so you don't have to, right? Yeah. And so we provide the service that the application can leverage while the developers can still have their own little sandbox to play in. And that's turned out to be the really happy model, so to speak. We've even gone so far as there are some of the larger developer environments where they've got their sandboxes that they play in, and we'll federate with their sandboxes so that they can get sort of the internal user experience. Now, when their applications go to production, they leverage the production service, because that way they don't get the phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday because their server went offline. Because those are the things that IT can provide. We provide the monitoring and the availability and the infrastructure components. And we've got, you know, rock stars like Femi who will make sure that everything's running.
So one of the really cool things one of the tasks I was given was to come up with this really simplified onboarding process where even Brian's teenage daughter can come in and say, hey, I need to onboard my Federation application, right?
And she'll probably do this at some point, too.
So it had to be real simple, and we can't take credit for that, well, all the credit for that, because the tool, or the product actually allows us to do this, right? It's just a simple mouse click or a couple of clicks or a get command in PowerShell, and you're done.
Most of the time the developers send us a file, the Federation metadata file that they've generated when they were building their app, and we import it.
Which was way, way cool, because with V1, we had to do everything manually, but now with V2, you can just upload your Fed metadata file that contains all the necessary metadata you need to federate, and all we have to do is just point parties to go pick it up.
If anyone's ever looked around for information about ADFS, odds are if you've come across some of the blogs, there's sort of a common theme out there, which one of the MVPs quoted was, you know, when there's problems with ADFS, it's usually related to certificates, typos, or certificates. Right?
Someone heard that.
That would be Laura.
That would be Laura Hunter. It's either PKI, a typo, or PKI.
Right.
And what we found is this eliminates the typos.
Yeah.
And which is a good thing, because we're trying to be efficient and quick.
In addition to that, though, it helps with the life cycle that has to come with the keys and the cert thumbprints as well. So that saves me a lot of pain.
Yeah. And it's nice to hear your side of the fence, because I usually make this point for developers, because even from our side, when we need to hook up an application to your identity provider or federation provider, it's the same. Right-click a wizard that points that, and I never have to type or even cut and paste a thumbprint certificate again. It just happens.
It's beautiful.
Exactly.
It's nice. All right, since we are getting warmed up with all these, how about talking a bit about the guts of the deployment? Like, you spoke about the high availability, you spoke about avoiding getting calls at 2 in the morning. I'm sure that a lot of the people in the audience wants to know what's the trick.
Yeah, so this was my other task. So the first one was simplified onboarding for rapid adoption. The second one was redundancy and high availability to show that MSIT owned and has the best core PDFS service.
Nice.
So,
look at the amazing, huge whiteboard.
This would be pretty. So, I've drawn this way too many times, I kind of have a trick now.
Here we go.
So, we'll go proxy, SDS, database. We have TK5, which is Washington. Excuse my handwriting.
Mine is much worse.
Say DB3, which is a data center, and Dublin, which is in Ireland somewhere. So what we've done for the core MSIT deployment is we have a set, so four proxy servers. So I just put the boxes in there. And have another set over here. And we have a big IP box that does the
hardware load balancing.
And then what we do is we have these go to the SDS. So we have a NLB cluster down here. Until I'm doing this record time too. And then we have another set for what we call the SDS.
These are the ADFS V2 servers, right?
V2 servers, correct.
Security token servers.
AKA SDS.
Yep.
So, and by the way, spec-wise, these are just standard SKUs for web servers. It's the role that's installed on the server that determines what if it's a proxy role. So just specify ADFS. So ADFS proxy or ADFS SDS,
right.
Security and token service. So what we have for Big IP is we have geo redundancy now, because we have kind of a mirrored infrastructure. I'm actually missing the little database, which is pretty much the core of the whole service. Without the configuration database, we really don't have a service. So what we have is these clusters all point to a SQL database. And we use merge replication to replicate the RP or the artifact cookies across both.
So why did we use merge replication instead of just saying we're going to put configuration changes in, only write them on the Washington infrastructure and then just let them replicate out one direction? Why did we need to?
So because we now support SAML protocol, right, which requires the artifact replay cookies, right?
Okay.
We did need to replicate across.
Okay, so let's expand a bit on that. You are using these for replay detection.
Yes.
So there is the replay cache, and you just replicate it across the two geographies. Nice.
Which means that if a user starts a transaction on one side but then finishes it on the other, then the experience is seamless.
Yep. Right. Or that if somebody steals, and of course it cannot happen because of the tunnel, but if somebody steals a token on a transaction to Dublin and tries to play it
right. In
Washington, we are still going to tell him, maybe some other time.
Exactly.
So even though these clusters are physically separated, right? One's in Washington, one's in Dublin, across the pond, right? With Big IP, we get the pretty good advantage of having geolocation as well, which is a side advantage. But the key advantage of this is redundancy. So something happens and someone, I don't want to say blow up, but something happens to Washington, right? Our employees or our end users are still able to get redirected or fail over to the Dublin and vice versa, the Dublin cluster and vice versa.
Nice.
So something to look at here. There's a lot of squares drawn on this board, right?
Some are rectangles.
Some are square. There's a lot of servers represented.
All right.
And it's worthwhile to point out, because the first time that I ever drew this picture, I went, holy cow, do I really have to get that many servers to stand up ADFS? And the reality was, no. Okay, well, do I have to have this many servers to have geo-redundancy? And the answer there was no. The point here was that MSIT is in mostly unique position of needing to dog food. Okay, and so we're constantly taking half of our infrastructure offline to rebuild it, install the next version of ADFS, and then switch it back online and take the other half offline and do the upgrade. Because again, our mission is provide the high availability infrastructure service, but also work with the product groups to do their dog fooding.
What's
right?
Really cool about this whole picture now is it's all virtualized.
Right.
Excuse my spelling, but it's all virtualized. So these are not physical hardware.
Right.
All right.
Which saves us some hardware space.
That's very nice.
So we did do some planning things. For example, in fact, we can come here. If you wanted to look at the way that we deployed this, there's a physical server. Is it like that? I'm pretty sure it's like that. It's something to that effect.
Yep.
Yeah. There's a physical server that hosts one proxy and one full. So there's four physical servers. Now, those physical servers are hosting many other virtual servers.
Yep. All right.
So we get IT efficiency. But this way we're paying very close attention to maintaining these high levels of infrastructure availability, because 200 plus applications, we now have mission critical services what are some of the things that people do with ADFS?
Company store?
No, payroll. Payroll is a great example, because most people who work at the company enjoy being paid.
I for one,
exactly. I do.
On time.
On time, yes. Yeah. And not only that, but one of the functions that we've done is we're working with a payroll provider for most of the employees in the company. They can go external via ADFS auth to access their payroll stubs, their paycheck stubs. You know, that's something. We also do things, for example, annual open enrollment for benefits is something that our HR department was able to work with an external party, and we use ADFS authentication there.
Wow.
That was a neat scenario because there was an added requirement. It wasn't just for, it wasn't just as simple as employees, because employees often aren't the, well, many employees often aren't the ones who have to manage their benefits, for example, you know, filing claims and things, but it's other members of their family. It's their spouses who often take care, in many cases, take care of the stuff. And so working with the applications, we're able to provide, for example, a corporate user can log in via their AD account, but we can allow their spouse, or whatever, to log in via Windows Live ID. And so being able to provide these multiple identity sources to applications is a huge benefit that's also only enabled with ADFS V2. So
wow,
something we couldn't do before.
That's big.
Yeah, so there's a lot of neat scenarios that
that's already a really cool feature.
Here it comes.
Absolutely.
Here it comes.
Right. So my favorite is, because this saves me a lot of pain, is I have a user here. So let me just give you a quick summary. This is regarding activity IDs now as part of the end-to-end diagnostic feature, I guess.
System engineer.
Before V1, right? Before V2, prior to ADFS V2, what happened was a user has an issue. They call IT. I'm sitting there and thinking, okay, I have to go through,
let's see, how many steps?
Servers, right? They check the logs, and then if the logs had wrap just recently, I'm...
Host. Yeah. Host.
So, so comes ADFS V2, and they have a new feature called, I'm naming it, Activity ID Correlation. And what this does is, say a user has an issue, user tries to hit one of the Reliant Party applications that we federated with. What happens is there's an issue with the application on the redirect, right? And they get a browser error, right? On the browser, it renders
a GUID,
activity ID. What all he has to do now, or she has to do, is copy that activity ID and send it to the IT department. And what I have to do is just come in. Actually, I have some cool scripts for this in PowerShell. Or I could go manually into one of the boxes and actually do a remote event viewer or something. Or just look in the box and just do a control find of that event ID. And I can see all the sessions, all the traces based on that single sign-on experience. That's really, really cool.
Nice. And usually when this happens, what do we find out? That somewhere in one of our partners a certificate expired.
All right.
Not that that's ever happened before, and not that that won't ever happen again, but hey,
really,
you know.
Really cool that just off of one activity ID, I can kind of go through my farm and servers, right, and figure out what the issue is. And it's pretty sequential as well, because it follows who the caller is, what the caller ID is, and it's really, 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 really cool.
Fantastic.
ADFS V2 rocks.
That's really great.
So that's my favorite feature.
Fantastic. So this gives a very nice view of the infrastructure. And not being an IT pro, for me, all this is like magic. And I pretty much...
It's supposed to be transparent. These are not the ADFS servers you were looking for.
Right. You serve your master well, and you will be rewarded.
Exactly.
And... So this has been a really, really interesting. And before we close, I actually have one personal like curiosity.
Okay.
I'm doing all these classes about Windows Identity Foundation around the world.
Can we sit now?
Absolutely.
Sure. Okay, so you're doing all these classes.
Yeah, and they are often asking me like how to balance like the power between the application developer and the ADFS owner, let's say the administrator.
Sure.
And with ADFS, we have all these interesting things that we can do, like have the authorization, like I'm not going to give you a token if you're not authorized, so that the application doesn't have to worry about that. And but without going on those extreme, you can do all those interesting rules in which you decide which claims should show up and similar. And that's nice to pull out from the application, but sometimes instead you want to still keep some control. So what's the criteria that you use for when the application developer comes to you and says, I want this claim that you don't offer, or I want to change the rules that I told you before and update them? So right. Your thought about this.
So our objective, right, is to ease the onboarding process and ease the management process and to streamline everything so that we get adoption, okay? What this translates to is we're really playing to the developer's, human tendency to be lazy.
Okay.
Because, and so what we're doing is we're providing with just models, okay? And lazy, efficient, whatever. We're providing with models. And let me just draw real quick. Okay, because there's different scenarios.
My square is
sorry.
Oh no, Washington is gone.
Washington, right?
That fell over.
But Dublin is still available.
All right.
Dublin is still online. Exactly. So we're really playing to the flexibility of the federated identity model, right? And trying to let the application developers do whatever they need to do. Okay, so we start off with our corp STS. Okay, the primary role that we're looking at this is our, what I refer to as our identity STS. We want this to be the single place that we do user auth, that we get specific or user-centric identity claims. Okay, now applications may need more. They may need more claims. They may need claims that come from someplace else. If they ask us to, we are more than willing to wire up an additional attribute store.
Hey, Brian, this sounds real familiar.
Well, hang on a sec. For what?
For the W-2 scenario.
Oh, yeah. Yes, exactly. Great example.
PPI and PPI data.
So perfect example. An application was looking for, if you're in the U.S., our taxes, we get this form called a W-2. So we wanted to be able to send personal information out in the token, but that information wasn't all stored in AD. So we talked to the application owners, found out where the information was, we put it into an attribute store, and the application, we were able to wire that up to our STS directly. Put the policy in. The policies that we host on our infrastructure are whatever the developers ask for. And because we, being Femi, is really familiar with the policy language at this point, then even if you don't know the policy syntax, what you need, but if you just know your business rules you're trying to achieve, then we'll help you implement those.
So just to clarify, the policy language is the language that ADFS uses for deciding which claims to issue and from where to source it.
Correct.
Perfect.
And so this is one scenario, which is just real easy. Okay. Another scenario is there are applications which are big, multi-component, complex beasts with their own business logic and rules built in and their own data stores and things like that. So what we'll do is they can have their own STS and we chain that off of theirs. They have their own, usually multiple attribute stores, whatever they need, their own multiple applications that all work off of their STS. Now, they own this part, but the key thing was that the authentication of the users still came through here, right? This provides a couple benefits. One, they don't have to worry about Kerberos and TLM. Two, they don't have to take care of things like managing federations with partners and with LiveID, because the last thing that I want is to go out to a company, ask them to federate with us, and find out that they already have 3 federations with us. Right, so this provides a central place for that, and they really don't want to have to manage this anyways. So they get to worry about their application. We take care of the user auth. We pass identities down to them. They provide the services that the users need. So it's really what we're trying to do is leverage federate identity both internally and externally in the most flexible ways that we can for the developers to meet their needs. Because if we don't, then the developers are going to have to go back to inefficient custom code, writing their own rules, standing up their own infrastructure. You know, we don't want to have everyone have to try to federate with all of our partners because we have 100 applications that somebody needs to get to. So we're really focused on making the developer experience good. So
fantastic. Guys, I really want to thank you for this. It was extremely interesting to hear from somebody who basically dealt with this every day in the last 2 years. And I'm sure that the audience really appreciated you sharing your experience.
Well, it's fun too. So
thank you, and I'm hoping that I will feature you again in future episodes.
Look forward to it. EFSV3, something like that. Whatever's next. Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Bye.